section number 7175, reel 7.
Sir Alexander Stanier, Reel 7. Can I ask you a little about the stage of the battle when you moved from your positions outside the town into the built-up area? Ask you how you went about selecting a position in the built-up area of the town. What were you looking for?
Always crossroads, main roads. Main communication.
This was to block enemy movement.
Stop them coming, just rushing through, making them go into small alleyways and lose their way and delay them.
What sort of preparations could you put into effect?
Well, I was very impressed with number 3 company that I went to thing. That they'd fairly barricaded themselves into this big white building, this crossroads, and they'd selected it extremely well from a fire point, firing point, and also to get into. As I found myself, I couldn't get into it, and so they were very well protected in that way. It was the company commanders who had to choose it. I couldn't. I chose a hotel as my battalion headquarters down by the quay, quite close to it, near the bridge. It was called the Hotel de la Paix. Wasn't much de la Paix about it. And there, the few minutes I was there, I was overrun by colonels and people all saying, "What am I to do? I've got a battalion. Can I help you?" and all this sort of thing. And of course, they were the most awful nuisance, poor things. I mean, I was terribly sorry for them. There were some very gallant old soldiers there, and they were put in the bag. Spent the war in prison.
What sort of thing would you do when you went into a building to make it defensible?
They shoved furniture up against the window, the doors and windows and things. And there were a lot of shutters, and they shut the shutters, and they made holes through the shutters so that they could fire through them. That's about all.
Did the Germans actually ever make an attempt to overrun any of your positions outside the town, or when you were occupying buildings inside it?
Yes, I think they were very keen to catch us before we got into the quayside. They didn't think that we could get out in the boats. And of course they concentrated on, they set one destroyer as it came in, they set it on fire, which was very disappointing.
How did they do that? Was that
bombing?
Bombing.
Yeah. Mm. And they had a lot of cordite on the deck. And they built up bags of cordite around their anti-aircraft guns. I don't know why. That all burnt. And
but did the Germans actually put any infantry into street fighting in the town?
No.
Just armoured
cars? Well, yes. They'd come up in cars behind the tanks and disperse. There'd be a certain number of infantry. It was an armoured division. But there weren't very few. There were very few infantry compared to the tanks. All I saw as commanding officer was tanks and half-track vehicles. If I saw anybody on their feet, I didn't know whether they'd got out of a tank or whether they'd got out of a motor car to get there. Nobody had marched there.
So, basically, what they were doing was chivvying you on the ground with armoured vehicles and trying to block your escape by bombing the area of the port.
That's right.
When you actually had to conduct a withdrawal, how did you go about doing it? What was the normal, what was the sort of procedure you adopted for falling back from one position to another?
I'd leave to the company commanders, who would tell one platoon to come back, and then another, and then another.
So it'd be a progressive thinning out.
Thinning out.
So you got onto the dock, and it was absolutely jammed with people trying to get off and into the ships. At the time you were withdrawing, were they still behaving well and in good order?
Very good on the quay side, and there was a bit of looting in the town. One or two, the old boys found some liquor about, but very few. No, I think on the whole, I think it was on the quay side, it was extremely good.
So the movement control organisation was still functioning
as far as it could.
While you were actually in Boulogne, you mentioned that you lost your supper because of the intervention of the waterworks manager. How did you get on for getting food and water other than that occasion?
Well, there seemed to be plenty of food about. There was plenty in the shops and plenty of stores at the clubs. There was a big naffy place down by the quay, and I think the quartermaster drew it from there.
So you had no difficulty in rationing?
None at all. Ammunition we found a bit difficult. There was plenty there. It was get it up to the companies.
So it was the immediate transport that was a problem.
Yeah.
What about water? Was that ever in short supply?
Not that I know of. Every man had his water bottle. I never heard of anybody being short. We luckily, every man... I ordered when they went from Cambly, they took a spade. Every man had a spade, and they were able to dig themselves in.
Now, eventually, I think you got onto a destroyer with the remains of your battalion, those that you managed to get down to the end of the quay. And what happened then? You were just sold back.
Well, luckily, we got away because we were below the quay side, and they couldn't shoot at us. And I think they had one or two pot shots as we sailed out of the harbour, but by that time it was dark and they couldn't see us. And I think they were beginning to withdraw themselves.
I think you said earlier on that by that stage they had taken control of a French coastal gun in the fort.
Yeah.
And they were using that to bombard the harbour.
And the destroyers were shooting back at it.
Did they manage to silence it?
They claim they did.
But you don't remember whether they did or not.
Well, I can't tell you.
What about tanks? Did the destroyers manage to hit any of their tanks?
The only thing I saw was this armoured track vehicle hit by a destroyer. I saw that hit. But I didn't see a tank because the tanks were jolly cunning. They only came as far as the quay, down the road, and just had a look through and fired and then withdrew. By the time you'd got onto the hole where they were, they'd reversed and disappeared.
So were the tanks firing on the move or did they actually stop?
No, I think they stopped. I think they came up, stopped, had a shot. Then immediately they'd fired, they withdrew, come down another street.
Did they manage to do any real damage by this sort of shooting?
Not on the quay side, because they didn't really get too much down there. They were a bit nervous with the destroyers. I think the destroyers may have hit some. Mm. I can't say whether they did or not, but I think they frightened them off, all right. Mm. Because it was, they were quite nasty guns the destroyers had.
Well, a destroyer's main
point
armament
blank.
Is fairly powerful.
Yeah, the point blank range. It's, I mean, fairly hit the, knocked the houses about when they hit them.
Was the town severely damaged when you were? withdrawing through it?
No, nothing compared to what it was afterwards. We bombed it when we thought the invasion was coming to England and fairly knocked it about. But even so, when I went there 2 or 3 years ago, I could find my way about everywhere exactly the same. I thought it was very little altered.
So the fighting didn't really do that much harm to the structure. What happened on the journey back to England? Was there any incident on the voyage across the Channel?
No. Once we were free, clear of the harbour, we never, all was quiet. Right back in England. And found we'd left an awful lot of people behind, because we had no idea which boats they were on. One officer had been wounded in number 3 company, Captain Carter, and had a cushy one in the arm here. And he went down to be attended to. And when we were practice around it, I remember sitting there thinking to myself, well, at any moment I think the Germans are going to surround us, whatever we do. But Captain Carter will be back in England and be able to tell them what's happened to us. When I got back to England, I said, what hospital's Captain Carter in? Of course, he'd never been evacuated. He'd been left in a hospital in Boulogne. Actually, his arm was much worse. He was unable to write with it the rest of his life.
So he hadn't managed to get through the press on the dockside?
No. He said to me, they put me in bed and took my trousers away, and there I was. A German officer walked in.
What happened to your battalion then, or the remains of it, once you got back to England?
We went to Aldershot, then we went down to Colchester for a night in both places. First of all, Aldershot, we drew quite a lot of new equipment there out of the stores. Then we went to Colchester to get reservists, because that's where our training battalion was. Then we went to Goodwood, and there we defended Chichester and all around there, waiting for the Germans to come.
But they didn't.
And then I was promoted brigadier very soon afterwards, and went on the East Coast.
What effect on the morale of the battalion did this experience of fighting in Boulogne have?
Determination they'd go back and beat the Germans up.
They were angry, were they?
Very angry. They didn't think they'd had a proper deal and they'd do it properly the next time. They were nice enough to say it wasn't my fault or Brigadier Fox Pitts.
How long do you think it took you to recover from the effects of the fighting and be ready to go again?
Oh, I should think 2 months.
By that time you were all fully formed up and reintegrated.
Yeah. Retrained and everything.
Do you think there are any general lessons that can be drawn from your experience of Boulogne?
Yes, masses of them. But I think the first thing is that communications is the most important thing. And you cannot send a battalion to war without proper communications. And that means maps, because no commander can give orders without them.
Because it was because of your lack of communications, really, that the 3 companies were left behind.
Exactly.
Because they just didn't get their orders, did they?
Didn't get their orders. I mean, there was no means of getting communication with them, because we got no motorbikes. We had 2 for the whole battalion. Well, when we got on the quay side, there were so many people who couldn't use motorbikes anymore. Don't go firing. Keep quiet. Let the enemy come up close until you're quite sure you can hit him sufficiently hard that he won't come again. But don't just give away your positions, which we did, I'm afraid. My fault. I mean, I didn't think about it at the time. I saw the Germans. I thought I was going to kill the first one I saw. You must be properly equipped. Yeah, I mean, if Germans have the enemy has strong armour, you must have a strong anti-tank gun to destroy it. And the same with nuclear bombs and things, you must have a strong deterrent to knock it out. It's no good going to war with them with jolly good tanks and us only having 2-inch mortars, because they're a waste of time. You must have the deterrent.
Do you think that the experience was valuable, personally, that it, you know, that you absorbed the lessons at the time?
Oh, it certainly put me on my toes. I know that when I went the second time, when I went with the invasion of Normandy, I thought, I'm not going to have any of this rubbish and nonsense this time. But then I had time. I mean, I knew D-Day in February, and it wasn't until June. I knew it wasn't going to take place until the end of May, and so on and so forth. But I divided everything up. I dare say other people told me to do it as well. But I duplicated everything as far as possible, particularly with communications. I mean, I didn't travel with my brigade major. I had him in a different boat to myself. I had a different link. He had a different link to me and all that sort of thing. He could talk to me, but he also could start off on a different thing if our line was broken. I think communication is vital.
It sounds as though then the fighting in Boulogne, whilst it was very short, was very intensive. And from the point of view of what you might call on-the-job training, it was extremely valuable.
Yeah. Oh, very much so. Very expensive way of doing it, in manpower,
yeah,
and money. But money doesn't matter, but manpower does.